Toodle-loom-a-loom-a-toodle-loom-a-loom-a-toodle-i-ay. Any umbrellas, any umbrellas to mend today. Bring your parasol, it may be small, it may be big.
Right, hello everyone. This is a, what do you call it, a red letter day, because we have a new player joining. Well, I don't think I can call you the old farts anymore, can I? I mean, Jen, would you like to be an honorary old fart? Or
I'm fine with it. That seems like it's been my destiny all this time, so...
Well, you're neither old nor a fart, so I think, you know, I had to ask. I'm happy with that. What was it you said was the alternative?
I said I was a mean old bitch, but...
Okay. Well, I'm not going to say that, but welcome, Jen. I'm really looking forward to this session and ongoing. And you're about to join us midway through, well, more than midway through, probably some way through the Book Hounds of London campaign set in London in the 1930s, mainly in the East End. And I think it's best that you just get introduced to the characters in situ. We're not going to do an introduction for any of them. You can just observe them and make your own mind up about who and what they are.
However,
I think it would be very nice for you to just tell us a bit about Wally.
Well, there's not much to tell, really. You know, standard childhood, very privileged, nannies and boarding schools and, you know, trips to all sorts of places around the globe. You know, standard childhood stuff, really. You know, these days I have kind of an artistic bent. I enjoy street photography. I think I'm really developing my own niche, and I really expect to sell something, anything at all, soon. That would be lovely. You know, I kind of bounce back and forth between London and Paris, photographing the common people and just living an exciting life, far away from my mother, who I believe is drunk in the Caribbean right now, so... And really, I'm searching for truth, though. I have kind of a little bit of a hobby of the occult. I'm searching for esoteric truth. There's power in knowing things, and I would like that power.
Fantastic. And you are... Your full name, please. We can call you Wally, but let's hear what your full name is.
Oh, it's Astrid Wallace Vandermeer, at your service.
Of course. Of the New England Vandermeers?
The New Canaan Vandermeers, yes. Vandermeer Amalgamated Industries. No doubt you've heard of explorer Cyril Vandermeer, who is also an industrial magnate. The last we heard, he was in Papua New Guinea someplace. But he's disappeared for longer before, so...
Wonderful. And you're currently residing, as you say, between Paris and London. Fitzrovia, I think, is where your pied-à-terre is.
Yes, it's darling.
Yes, it really is. It's just a stone throw away from the flesh pots of the West End. Not that you would ever, well, I don't know, would you?
Never say never, darling.
We start with rather an unfortunate moment in your life right now, because your dear friend, Damien Flight, had some terrible accident or injury, and he's in the Royal London Hospital and is just recovering from emergency surgery.
Oh, good heavens.
Yes, you were contacted as his his primary contact. Maybe he's from distant parts. Maybe his family live in Calcutta or somewhere, as you know.
Yes.
And you've rushed over to the East End of London, which probably a part of town you don't really like setting foot in. It's rather déclassé. And you've entered the kind of gloomy and damp halls of the Royal London Hospital, that edifice to the medical profession. And you've met you're up on the second floor, having a conversation with Dr. Barnett, who actually just performed surgery on your friend, Damien. So he's there with a grave expression on his face. And he says...
Dr. Barnett?
Yes, Miss Vandermeer, Miss, of course. Your friend Damien, he's had a severe trauma, and unfortunately, we couldn't save the arm. It was literally shredded. The lower arm from the elbow down was completely, the muscles and the skin were utterly devastated by, well, it looks like an industrial accident to me, but, well, we fished him out of the Thames, you see, down near Wapping, and he was, well, I think it may have traumatized him beyond the physical injury. He was babbling about a crocodile.
A crocodile? In the Thames?
Yes, I know, I know. I think the shock of the injury must have done something to his mind. Well, anyway, we brought him in. We tried to save the arm, but it was beyond repair, really. And, well, we had to amputate. He's in recovery now in the main ward. You're welcome to go and see him.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Right away, please. A whole arm.
Yes, and he walks off with his clipboard. So, yes, you head up into the main ward. And as you enter, you see Damien, his floppy fringe of blonde hair, just that familiar sweep across his forehead. He looks very pale, naturally. And you see that his left arm, perhaps fortunately he is right-handed, his left arm is missing. There's just a bandage around the stump. And it's kind of suspended up in some kind of pulley, perhaps to avoid any contact to damage the healing end of the member, as it were. And as you walk towards him, you see that there's in the bed next to him is a young woman, and there's a couple of sort of elderly and rather disreputable looking gentlemen sitting next to her. There's one of those curtains between, but you may want to keep your conversation low if there's anything discreet. You want to be discreet about anything. But yeah, as you approach and Damien looks over at you, and rather surprisingly, he seems quite chipper.
Damien, darling, what has happened to you?
Oh, Wally, oh, it's so wonderful to see you, so wonderful. The doctors have given me all kinds of wonderful stuff. I believe some morphine, a bit of cocaine. Absolutely splendid, splendid.
Oh, well, it's just a Saturday night for you here, isn't it?
Oh, yes, of course, yes. Yeah, bit of a shame about this, he says, pointing to the stump.
Well, you know, they're doing amazing things with prosthetics these days, and I do think it gives you rather a rakish air, sort of like a pirate.
Oh, I say, yes, you think I could get a hook put on the end? Oh, I think it'll put a crimp in my double-handed backhand, though, don't you think?
A little bit. Oh,
the Queen's Club, they'll just laugh me off the court.
Well, you know, practice makes perfect. And anyway, think of the amazing stories you'll have to tell at cocktail parties. Oh, you'll be the belle of the ball, I think.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, but you know what? I think they should get those crocodiles out of the Thames, you see? They gave me a really nasty nip, as you can see.
Crocodile in the Thames. Now, the doctor said something about that, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, dear, but I am from out of town, but I would think that crocodiles would be a little bit unusual in the Thames at this or really any other time of the year.
Well, I mean, it is summer, isn't it?
It is, in a fashion, yes. Yes. I'm not saying I disbelieve you, Damien, dear, and, you know, you've clearly been through something terrible, but I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around the whole crocodile thing, you know.
Well, yes, you see, well, my recollection is a little bit fuzzy, and the morphine doesn't help, I've got to tell you that, although, if you could ask them to just increase the dial a little bit, it is twinging a little, just occasionally. No, but if I, like, wind myself back to the other night, I was walking along the Thames near Wapping. Let's say there was an assignation, and I was had a meeting, let's say, with a lady from the East End. If you see what I mean, Wally. I mean, you know me and my predilections. Anyway,
crystal clear.
Yes, yes. And we were walking along, and there was this sort of noise, and then she turned to me and she shrieked out, "There's a fucking crocodile!" You see? And the last thing I saw was this great big toothy mouth just clamping down on me, and the bugger pulled me into the river. You see?
I don't want you to take this question the wrong way, but had you been drinking, dear? Just a little bit, maybe?
I mean, you know me. Just the odd sort of the odd pint of brandy or so, but no more than normal.
The odd gallon of wine.
Yes, you know, I mean, it was a Thursday night. I mean, come on. But anyway, I do remember this sort of green, scaly, sort of like carapace over it. Yes. And the tongue, of course, very long tongue, as crocodiles have, don't they? Don't they have very long tongues?
Long tongues?
Yes.
I don't recall that. You know, I'll have to get more information on that. But we'll get to the bottom of this, Damien. I think that we will. We might have a little bit more luck with it once you're no longer on morphine, but it certainly looks like you're having a good time, and that's a huge relief to me, honestly. I was terribly worried when I got the call.
I know, and but would you be an absolute darling and send a telegram to Papa in Calcutta?
Yes.
Just say that I had a little oopsie. Just, I don't want him to worry too much. If you see something in the papers and that sort of thing.
Right. Dear Papa, had a little mess up. I am unarmed.
That's rather witty. Yes, I like that. I like that.
Excellent.
So, welcome, Wally.
I hand him a potted orchid that I've had with me this whole time. You never come empty-handed.
Wonderful, wonderful. And we will just move over 6 feet to the next bed where Rita has been, well, recuperating for a couple of days from a rather unpleasant incident. I think you've probably also had a bit of morphine as well, because you had to be stitched up. Well, maybe Dr. Barnett as well. Maybe that's his thing. I'll tell you what, let's sort of rewind about 10 minutes before Wally appeared and have Milton and Dr. Emery, not a medical doctor, by the way, just Jenny for your benefit, a doctor of something that we've...
Anthropology.
Anthropology, there we go. I mean, that could be useful. Yeah, so the two of you have had rather a night, haven't you? You're both probably still drunk. There's probably still some vomit.
Oh, God, yes. Yes. But on the other hand, I think that's pretty much how we turn up to any event.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. So you've made your way up to the main ward to find Rita recuperating from, well, from something. I don't think, you don't know what this was. You just got word that Rita was in the Royal London Hospital.
No, we got some indication, didn't we, Fräulein Van Kant, was it, about her having...
dealt with.
Yeah, having dispatched some kind of entity to deal with Rita.
Indeed. Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. So I think you probably hurried there as fast as your aging legs could carry you.
Which isn't that fast.
And Rita, let's say that you're just maybe waking up from your sort of morphine-induced sleep yourself.
Ah, Miss Rita, how wonderful. You haven't been completely devoured. That's a very good start. Very good start. We had heard some rather alarming things that suggested that you might be dead, but you do seem to be... Well, you are alive, aren't you? Yes, you are. Yes.
I guess. I mean, how many times have we spoken since... the other day.
Which other day would that be?
Well, I meant to order your food.
Food?
Well, Dr. Milton always, you know, you wouldn't want to come to my place and not have anything to eat.
Obviously, but could you be a bit more specific, perhaps, about...
Well, I asked you what you wanted to eat, and what did you said, you know, shepherd's pie, I think it was.
We were at your place.
Yes, I'm sure that's what happened. But, yes, I think the last time we saw each other was at the public house.
Oh, yeah, was that the one that you bought?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, have I still got my office above the fish shop?
You do still have your office? Yes, yes. It's everything is perfectly safe, and we're keeping it all locked up for you and ready for your return.
And what is Nora there? Is Nora waiting in the office?
I believe she's away on business at the moment.
Oh, okay. I need to go to the toilet, and I'm going to try and get out of bed.
I think they have bedpans for that. Let me get a nurse.
Yes, steady on, Rita.
I reckon my stomach is pretty sore. So I kind of, oh.
Yeah, when you get cut across the stomach, obviously, I mean, you took a major wound, I seem to recall. When you get cut across the stomach, it's really hard to sit up. Like, all the muscles are...
So I just give up. I just give up. Did you say a bedpan, Dr. Emery?
Well, Dr. Emery's wandered off in search of a nurse at this stage.
Okay. So it's Milton is your man for the bedpan.
Did you bring the gravy?
Really? Absolutely. Well, I've got some steak.
Have you been washing in surgical spirits again, Dr. Milton?
I'm not sure there's much gravy left on it, to be honest. It's soaked into the jacket, I'm afraid. I guess grapes would probably have been more customary.
I remember flying over the vineyards. And they just went on forever. They just went on over the horizon.
Indeed.
What's wrong with you, man? What's wrong with you?
Dr. Emery?
I think Emery's wandering back at this stage, clutching a bedpan in his hand. I couldn't find a nurse, but I believe this one is clean. Oh, well, clean enough.
Hurry up and put it under the sheet, will you?
By the way, has the conversation been going on in the other bed simultaneously with this?
It's about to happen. Let's say it's about to happen in about 2 minutes.
Okay. Then, yes, I'm sure you have a much better idea of what to do with this than I have. I'll say, and just dump the bedpan in Rita's lap.
So after a moment or two, okay, Dr. Emery, you can take it out now. Thanks very much.
Yes.
I'll just slide it out. Just slide it out. As you know, there'll be someone.
Nurse!
Yeah, they'll be along. They'll be along shortly. Just, you know.
So a nurse comes hurrying over and says, is everything okay? Miss Rita, are these friends of yours, is that vomit? Are you perfectly okay, sir? Is everything okay, sir?
Yes, I'm perfectly fine, but I believe Miss Rita needs tending to in a rather delicate way, yeah. We shall avert our eyes.
Just shoo.
No. Dr. Emery put the bedpan in there. I mean, it's...
I did no such thing.
I know, but I mean, Miss Rita, you're probably not yourself. This is an indelicate thing for two old men to be watching you micturating in your bed. Now, off you go. And she shoos you to the other side of the curtain and pulls it shut.
I mean, at this point, Emery is just muttering with Milton. I mean, the training they give the medical staff these days, I mean, they should know that micturation is the process whereby the kidneys produce urine, and what she's actually referring to is urination. I mean, honestly, I worry that our friend isn't in the best medical hands.
You know, nurse, you don't listen to a word they're saying. I don't listen to anything that they have to say anymore. I've known them for a very, very long time, and they've come around for food. It's very nice to have them, you know. But they can't expect me to remember what food we're having, especially if they can't remember themselves.
She just opens your mouth and sticks in a thermometer and says, I think you might have a fever there, Rita. Now, please, just do your business and we'll clean you up and then... Right, okay.
I just went to the vet and I'm taking out. You know, it's time for lunch with my friends.
Yes, they can eat in the canteen, Rita. We don't allow visitors to eat by the patient's bedsides. It's highly unhygienic.
Well, can you take this thing out of my mouth, please? I don't need this.
She looks at it and says, well, you don't seem to have a fever. And can I just have a quick look at the bandages? And she lifts up the sheet and sort of has a look. And says, well, that's good.
That's good, is it?
Oh, it is, because you're not bleeding anymore. You had some severe lacerations. Now, the doctor told me that you said it was... What was it you said it was? I mean, I
said that, as far as I can remember, it all happened on St. Patrick's Day. And I was out with my friends. And I tell you, this guy, right, he came up to me, this guy. No shame. And I'm not going to repeat what he said to me. I'm not going to repeat it to you. But I tell you, I looked him in the eyes, then I dislocated his jaw. That was it.
What? And then some other ruffians set on you and slashed you, did they?
Well, I think you're talking about the time we had, you know, we would go over to my grandmother's for Christmas.
Oh, I see. Okay, well.
But it was always a good spread.
Right, I think a little bit more rest for you, Rita, and I'll leave you. And would you like me to escort your visitors out?
No, bring them back. Bring them back, please. And could you get my hat, please? I'd like my hat back.
Well, you're not going anywhere right now, Rita.
No, just for inside. Just, I'm very comfy here.
Well, it's very irregular to wear a hat indoors, but I'll see if it makes you feel better.
And she leans over to the nurse and she says, you might not know this about me, but I'm a private detective.
She says, yes, dear, I'll get your hat. And then just pats you on the head and leaves you. So let's say, during that time, whilst you were standing by the curtain, you couldn't help Dr. Emery Milton overhearing an American lady in the next bed talking about crocodiles in the Thames attacking her friend.
Almost absentmindedly, Emery will just look over and say, I think you'll find that wasn't a crocodile, but some eldritch monstrosity controlled by a German sorceress of our acquaintance. It's all right. The matter has been dealt with. She won't be doing it again in a big hurry, or at least I don't think she will. I'm not entirely sure. She is something of a wild card, but at least she does now worship my friend here as a god, so we do have some degree of control over the situation.
Dr. Emery, indoor voices, come on. What should we be discussing this out here and then public?
Well, where else would we be discussing it? This is where we are.
I'm sorry, to whom am I speaking?
I'm terribly sorry. I'm Dr. Emery Watson, anthropologist.
I'm Astrid Wallace Vandermeer, at your service, but absolutely everybody calls me Wally.
Really? And you invite that?
I love it. Please do. It's Miss Vandermeer, if you're nasty. So, I was wondering, you said something about it wasn't a crocodile that my friend came into contact with?
No, of course not. I mean, perfectly ludicrous. There are no crocodiles in the Thames. It was, as I said, an eldritch monstrosity that had been summoned by a sorceress.
A sorceress?
Yes.
Really? A sorceress of your acquaintance?
It's not remotely ludicrous.
Rita pipes up and she says, there's absolutely no way that thing was a crocodile. You know, it's practically standing on two legs with big hands, and it was all fatty. I don't know anything about anything really, but, you know, crocodiles, they're not all blubbery things. You know, this was a big blubbery thing on two legs.
Right, and scales and teeth and claws and all of that?
Yeah, but no offense to you. Looking at, what's his name? You know, the guy with Damien. You know.
Damien?
That's not a fucking crocodile.
And he pipes up at this point and says, did it have a very long tongue, though, your one?
Longer than a fucking crocodile's.
Oh. Well, maybe I miss... Well, it was dark. And I was being dragged under the water at the time, so a bit hard, really, to see. Well, I'm sorry, Wally. Maybe I've led you all astray. Maybe it wasn't a crocodile at all. Maybe it was some great big blubbery thing with teeth. Whatever that's called.
Yes, I must admit, my knowledge of herpetology is a bit vague, but I believe that crocodiles, on the whole, aren't known for their prehensile tongues.
Yes, I would agree with you there. That was an odd detail that I was struggling to reconcile with the rest of the facts, but I think that you're correct there. But Damien, darling, it hardly matters what took your arm, right? I mean, from your perspective, you know, crocodile... Eldritch monstrosity, or some sort of discarded machinery at the bottom of that filthy, filthy river. It really doesn't matter what took your arm.
An arm's an arm.
I suppose not.
Yes, that's wise words.
I think we need to gather up a hunting party then and take this blighter out. I mean, it goes around...
Well, as I said, I believe the matter is already dealt with. We have had words with the sorceress in question, and I'm sorry, Milton, you'll have to put me straight here, because I must admit I was rather the worse for wear, but I believe she did say that she'd stopped doing it now, or I don't know. I was a bit... Some of the details eluded me.
I did put the cat amongst the pigeons somewhat, in that I tried to divert their attention so we could continue our business unabated. I do perhaps think that maybe I may have started a kind of a little holy war of sorts.
Unholy war?
Well, yes. But I don't think she'll be bothering us anytime soon.
So you've extracted a promise from the monster in the river? Is that what I'm...
The lady responsible for evoking this attack, shall we say, has... I've thrown her off the scent, shall we say.
Yes. I think it's less a case that we've extracted a promise and more that we've confused her and readjusted her priorities.
Oh.
And then Damien pipes up again and says, well, if some rancid old trout has a vicious pet lurking in the Thames, I think she should get a jolly good walloping. I mean, the bloody thing took my arm.
Yes.
How am I going to serve? How can I serve with one arm?
Oh, Damien.
That is quite the quandary. I would hesitate to take any action against this woman for a number of reasons, not least of which is that from a legal perspective, it would be rather difficult to prove that your arm was lost to an act of sorcery. But also, I think she is rather volatile.
Well, I've dealt with volatile women in my time, I'll have you know, Dr. Emery.
Oh, yes. Yes, far be it from me to stand between you and your revenge.
I mean, you should see Wally here when she gets her temper on. I mean, goodness me.
Oh, Damien.
She once gave me a backhand and then sent me flying halfway across the room. I did deserve it, but still.
You've absolutely deserved it, Damien. You often have the most punchable face that I've ever met in my entire life. Desperately calling out for a fist. But I'll be nice to you because you're in the hospital, dear. But I don't think, given the very little information that we have on this woman, that we should be heading off to the Thames with a bunch of guns to go possibly murder a sorceress that lives in the river. It's just, you know, when you say it out loud, it sounds silly, doesn't it, Damien?
Oh, a water witch. I've heard of that. A water witch, yes.
Yeah, she doesn't actually live in the Thames. She lives in, where was it, Islington?
She lives in a flat off Upper Street. I think all of this conversation, plus the earlier conversation, Milton, is making your tummy grumble a little. I mean, it's only been 2 hours since you ate the last steak, and Rita's requests for dinner, I think, have given you a bit of a hunger.
Well, I'm just wondering, I think perhaps I may have noted somebody pushing a trolley down the corridor, just past the room. Something's caught my... I caught a whiff of something rather curious. So I'm just going to stretch my legs, if you don't mind.
Hey, Milton, can you get me one of them steamed puddings, please, with the custard trimmings?
I'll see what I can rustle up for you.
Fantastic. Oh, the bits with the fruit in. Could you get me one with fruit in it? I don't know what it's called.
That's spotted dick, yes?
So, Milton, yes, you do catch the whiff of something delicious, something sort of a tang in the air. Just seemingly since your little role play with Birgit von Kant, it seems like your senses are a little bit heightened, like your sense of smell seems to be more precise. And there have been all kinds of...
Milton's in love.
He's in... could be. Or could be something else. Yeah. Your sense of smell seems intense, and the smells in this hospital are strangely tantalizing. I mean, underneath the smell of disinfectant, you smell all kinds of smells that seemingly are quite alluring to you. There's the iron tang of blood and maybe slightly necrotizing flesh and things like that seem sort of... It's a bit, to you, they smell like just a good kind of gorgonzola or something now, which is very odd. And you follow this orderly pushing a trolley down through one of the corridors, and they get into an elevator, and you follow them in to the elevator because the smell is so tantalizing. And the orderly sort of looks at you just briefly, and he leans over and he says, basement? As he presses the B button.
Is that where you're heading?
Well, yeah. Wash up these surgical pans.
Yes, I am heading in that direction. Yes, yes.
Right. And you look down and you see the smell that was attracting you seems to be just dried blood in the pans, just a smear of blood. And maybe there's a bit of liver or something in one of them or something. But
if the orderly is distracted pushing buttons, I might try and maybe sneak a little piece, pass it around my back. And
that's fine. He walks out, you know, he turns his back to you for a moment and presses the B button, and you just grab a piece of matter from one of the kidney trays.
Just pop it in, have a little chew.
Jen, I should have perhaps given you a warning about where Milton is at the moment in his headspace. Just to fill you in, the others know, he had a rather close encounter with a rather unpleasant mythos entity a while back, which seems to be doing some things to his head finally, after all these years. So don't run screaming from this group. This is not typical.
This is seriously fine.
It's all new to me, too.
It's doing things to his head, but I don't think we're in real danger until it starts deflating it.
Yeah, that is true.
Right. That face wasn't like, ooh, he's eating, you know, excised parts. It was more like, ooh, organ meat. Gross.
Yeah, organ meat is... So, Milton, you pop the piece of... Well, it's very dark. It's this sort of deep burgundy-coloured organ meat into your mouth, and you just let it sit there.
Very iron rich.
Yeah, you just let it sit there on your tongue. And part of your mind is struggling against this urge, but the bigger part of it right now is just enjoying it.
I'm certainly, yeah, I'm not proud of myself in this moment, but I'm kind of enjoying it.
And then you get to the basement and the elevator doors slide open and the orderly pushes the tray out He kind of gives it a second glance and then shakes his head and then carries on down the corridor. And your nose is now alive with scents. There's definitely the smell of fresh blood in the air. And, well, it's very enticing. There's a light coming from a slightly open door up ahead, and you can hear these sounds of cutting, slicing, coming from beyond the door.
Well, I guess I'm going to follow my nose and maybe have a little peek through the doorway, see if I can spy what's going on.
And as you approach, I was thinking of making you make a sanity roll at this point. Let's leave that for 1 minute. I mean, I think you definitely have to make one at some point, but let's leave it for a minute because you push.
It's going
to
get worse.
Yeah. So you push the door open, and there's a rather portly man with white hair, balding on the top, with big sideburns, and he's got a waistcoat on and a white shirt, and the shirt is splattered with blood all the way up the arms, and he has a long surgical knife in his hand. And he seems to be dissecting the body of a woman lying on a slab in the room. And he turns to you as you push the door open. And he says, without any hint of surprise that you're standing there, he says, "Do you wish to observe, sir?"
Would that be okay? Is that possible?
Of course it will. Of course it is. Please, there's a bench there. You may sit and watch me.
Thank you very much.
Right, so he lifts his head up in the air and takes a deep inhalation through his wide nostrils. And he says, "How rude of me," he says, putting down the knife, and just gives his hands a cursory wipe, even though they're covered in blood. And he comes over to and holds his hand out, and he says, "I'm Mr. Donston."
I take his hand. "Pleased to meet you, Mr. Donston. My name is Milton. Milton Blythe, and I am, I was looking for the canteen, but I appear to have found myself down here instead. And I must say, I find this all extremely fascinating."
"I know, yes. I know you would. I know, Milton. I can smell it on you."
And then he sniffs again.
"Really? Well, this jacket does need a good clean, I must say. I hope I'm not putting you off at all from your work."
"Not at all. Not at all, Milton. Not at all, Milton. You're not putting me off at all. No, no, no. But I think we may have to deal with something together, you see." "Mm-hmm. I think you may need to give me a hand."
"How can I assist you?"
"Well, there's so much meat here. There's so many delicious organs,"
he says, just pointing back to the splayed corpse behind him.
"Delicious, you say?"
"Yes. They are, though, aren't they?"
"Do you get many visitors down here?"
"Not visitors like you, Milton, because you're quite special, aren't you?"
"Well, I'm certainly feeling a little different recently."
"Yes, yes, you are. I do hope that we can be friends, Milton."
"Well, if we can keep this under our hat, perhaps we might be able to forge some kind of a relationship."
"Yes, you see, I'm not really here, Milton. You're not really having this conversation. At least, not really. But I need you to do something. I need you to do something, Mr. Blythe."
"Okay."
"You see, I didn't finish my work."
"Please explain."
"You see, I was trying to open the eye fully. I almost got there."
"The eye?"
"Yes, Milton, you know what I'm talking about. Your Dark Rider knows exactly what I'm talking about. The Eye of Biatis, of that which lurks beneath these festering streets. The scum, the filth. We have to clean it all up, and that requires that my work be finished."
"Okay."
"And must be done like this."
And he stabs a finger towards the splayed corpse.
6 more are needed. 6 more, Milton."
"Bodies?"
"Yes, Milton. The eye must be completed."
"Well, I mean, we're in the right place, aren't we?
Not really. Only corpses here, Milton.
Is that not what we want?
In the end, yes, of course. But the transfiguration cannot happen unless they live before they die, Milton.
In what manner are we talking?
You'll see, Milton.
Surely all corpses live before they die, do they not?
Yes, I know I misspoke a little bit there. But you're a clever boy, Milton. You'll figure it out. Dives has the information you need. Just follow the chart.
You know Dives?
Oh, that pathetic man. Thinking he can carry out the great work? No, 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 no. It has to be someone like you, Milton. Someone who's already got the seeds of corruption planted deep inside.
Well, steady on. Look, I may have some rather exotic tastes, but where is this going?
You'll see, Milton. You'll see.
And then Donston just evaporates in front of your eyes. He just slowly becomes transparent and then disappears. And all that's left is this stench of blood and feces in this room. It seems like this body wasn't dissected so much as eviscerated. And there's a long surgical knife just lying on the table covered in blood. And I think at this point, you do need to make your sanity roll.
Okay.
You've got a really high sanity, haven't you? I keep trying to get it.
I think so, yes, yes. Where are we?
Oh, oh no, you don't have a very... I thought you had a much higher than that. Well, that is unfortunate because you're on your own. So let's hope, let's see. So I need you to roll a D8 for this experience. One more, and I've got you. But 4 obviously is quite a hit. I don't know if you... Do you know if you lost sanity in the last session during that encounter with Birgit? I think there was maybe a little bit.
Oh, sure, did we?
But certainly not enough to have lost a fifth of your sanity. So you don't have a bout of madness, but you can narrate some reaction because that's still quite a hit for sanity. Tell me what your reaction is.
And I kind of... I start to tear up, but I move towards the table and look at the body and find myself running my fingers through whatever is there.
And that guttural voice inside your head, the one that you've heard before, the one that seems to have been there as the echo in your mind for so many years, just says,
"Yes, Milton. Yes."
And we'll leave you there in the basement of the Royal London Hospital, running your fingers through the viscera.
As I begin to sob.
Yeah. Trigger warning. God. Right. Meanwhile, upstairs, in a more, perhaps a lighter moment. Yeah. So we're back with Rita and Wally and Dr. Emery. Perhaps Damien at this point has passed out.
Probably for the best, really.
Yeah.
Where has Milton got to?
It's my pudding.
Your friend?
Yeah.
Followed an orderly off into the, I don't know, mists of mystery, I suppose. It's a rather large hospital.
Just when you think he's going to do something really weird, you know, he just comes right. You know, he's got this kind of strange but endearing kind of, you know, manner to him.
He's probably just found some plum pudding somewhere.
Well, I asked him, didn't I ask him, you know, bring it back? God.
Yes.
You did, yeah. I heard it. So, did you find your encounter, Miss Rita?
Yes.
Your encounter with the monster, was that near the Thames as well?
It was. It came up out of the water. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Out of the water?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
I'll look at Emery. Emery, do you know? We don't know.
It has been rather a long night, but I believe it was only... I mean, you left us at the pub about 12 hours ago, so it can't have been long after that.
12 hours? So, like, yesterday? Last night?
Well, last night, yes.
Okay. Well, his word's as good as any, give or take.
Yes. Well, you know, we're not dealing in absolutes here, and apparently we're not dealing with crocodiles either. But I believe that my friend was also attacked last night. And you say that it's not going to be an issue anymore?
I don't believe so. The whole situation is rather confused. As I said, the woman in question does seem to have taken it upon herself to use some form of sorcery to call this entity upon those she perceives as her enemies, or, and I assume, just innocent bystanders as well. But I must admit, I don't actually know if the entity is something that she makes manifest, or whether it is simply there in the Thames the whole time, and she calls it forth. I mean, if it's the latter, then yes, I suppose a number of other people may well end up being eaten.
Well, that's comforting to know. So which are you? Are you an enemy or an innocent bystander?
He's a drunk.
I'm not entirely sure.
She seems like a woman who needs a straight answer. You know, innocent. I don't think so. But anyway, sorry, you carry on. You carry, dig your own grave.
Our relationship with this woman is both new and rather complicated. We were not entirely aware of her existence until comparatively recently, and certainly had not met her until last night. And the circumstances of our meeting were rather peculiar. As I said, a lot of it is a bit of a blur to me. I must admit, we had spent rather a long time at the public house before embarking upon this little expedition. But yes, I do seem to remember us manifesting in her living room through a sorcerous act of our own, upsetting her dinner companion by tickling his viscera, and then I think managing to convince her that Milton is an avatar of the god she serves, and therefore she should follow his commands to... Oh, I can't remember exactly what it was that we decided to command her to do, but I'm sure when Milton comes back with his plum pudding, we can get that straight. But I remember it did seem very clever at the time.
Miss Wally, just in case this is all rushing past you, you know, it's rushing past me because I don't know what they're talking about, but these two doctors, they know their stuff. They, right? And I tell you, this took me a while. It took a while to sink in. These two are occult investigators. They're researchers into the occult, and I am a private detective.
Private detective? Oh, that sounds terribly exciting.
And an aviator. I just like to say that.
A flying detective.
I know.
An aviator as well. Oh, good heavens. You must be terribly brave.
But if you had been talking to me 10 years ago, you know, if you were me 10 years ago, you would be saying to me, I don't think I'm talking to the same person. But these two, I mean, there's only one at the moment, but, you know, the other one, I'm sure it'd be back. But I've seen some stuff, but they've seen more stuff, and they can do all this kind of, you know, they read books and they can do strange stuff with those books.
Well, that's actually something of an interest of mine, actually, the occult. Yes, I've done a little bit of my own research. I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in it or anything, but I have a few, you know, volumes of my own, some a little bit rare. I've been looking for more information of this. I've, you know, bounced around from group to group, but often it's really just an excuse for a bunch of rich wankers to hold orgies disguised as seances, really.
It's strange. We've been avoiding them, haven't we, Dr. Emery? Somehow they haven't, that's not really happened too much for us.
Yes, I must admit, I can't remember the last time we were invited to an orgy.
Weren't you looking for, what was it, frolickers? Were they fornicators? Didn't you and Milton have to look for out?
Yes, there was an awful lot of frolicking that did go on in Surrey, but I don't think that was entirely the orgiastic variety. It seemed to be a bit more peculiar than that.
You know, Miss Wally, Dr. Emery here, he's got a bookshop full of books, and basically nobody comes in. And if they do, He doesn't let them buy the books.
Oh, I do from time to time. We do need to pay the rent.
What was the last book you sold in there?
It was something to do with cheese, wasn't it?
Gee, I think I was upstairs when that sale took place.
Isn't that oneiromancy?
Yes.
I think it is.
I think it might be, yeah. Oh, well, this is terribly exciting. I feel as though Providence has placed us in each other's path, because this is definitely an area of my interest, and I've been searching for answers on my own, and I never really thought that something like this would touch someone that I knew. But now you're telling me sorcery is real, magic is real, this gentleman does magic, and has angered a sorceress, and one of you is the emissary of a evil god?
That's the other one. He owns a pie shop.
Evil pies?
No.
Just regular kind?
Some of them do seem to involve jelly deals, so yes.
Ooh.
And they certainly have an evil effect on your indigestion.
He sells them, you know, pretty fresh.
Still crawling, I suppose.
So at this point, I think this is an appropriate moment for Milton to return. Milton, perhaps your head's a bit fuzzy. You can't quite remember what happened down in the basement, but you got a couple of slightly heavy bags of something in your pockets. And you did manage to get some plum duff with custard.
I think I probably tried to clean up along the way. I may have missed a bit here and there, but I've done my best.
Yeah, maybe when Donston shook your hand, some of that blood just, it's hard to get off.
He was running his hands through the entrails.
Yeah, I did have my hands in the...
Oh yes, that as well.
I don't think that's raspberry jam in the custard.
Yeah, and that gentle sloshing of whatever it is in your pockets is a comforting sound. But yeah, you've brought back the plum duff for Rita, who you know has a bit of a sweet tooth.
Ah, we were getting rather worried about you, Milton.
There you go, Rita. Well, you know what it's like. Food is a bit of a distraction for me, and I did kind of lose my way a little bit. And, well, you know, fortunately, it's made it back here in one piece. So there you go.
Thanks, Dr. Milton. I'm still warm, and all that custard, thanks so much. With raspberry jam on the top, that's fantastic. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
I was just trying to relay to our new friend here, what exactly was the upshot of our little adventure with the Van Kant woman last night? I know we did convince her to worship you, but I can't remember what that led to. The rest of the evening is a bit fuzzy, I'm afraid.
It's a bit of a blur for me, you know, that wonderful atmosphere, the candlelight, the delicious steak.
The gin.
The gin, indeed. You're a bad influence on me, sir. The intention was to put our efforts into dealing with the other party who would be bidding for the book.
Well, I think we'd set her at odds with both De Castries and Dives.
Yes.
Does that mean that on their own, Emery and Milton have just, like, sunk any kind of ethical standards that we've had as good people? You've sent out
ethical standards.
The call to get all of the other buyers taken out. Fantastic. Fantastic.
In my defence, Andy has given us entirely too many NPCs, and I was just simply trying to clear some of them off the playing board.
Can't agree more.
Yeah, we're just whittling it down a bit, yeah.
Fantastic.
Thin out their numbers.
Before we get onto that, since when have you been ethical?
I just feel there's a kind of a tipping point in each adventure, and I think that was it, wasn't it?
I was going to say, that's rich coming from Rita.
And don't blame me about the NPCs, it's bloody Kenneth Height. That will be cut, I hope. Kenneth, we really enjoy playing your adventure. We've got an actual play. I only slag you off 3 times.
Every episode.
Anyway, but I don't think you've actually... I think you just gave her a general instruction to perhaps use her allies and powers to perhaps take some of the others out. But I don't think that's where we left it.
Is she going to check in with them? You know, is she going to kind of update the master?
I think she thought it was an actual apparition, that Milton was some kind of avatar that will appear to her, because they were in ghostly form. That's the other thing we didn't mention.
they were sort of incorporeal.
Well, no, we became very corporeal, yes.
Well, no, we did appear. We materialised.
Yes. Yes, you did, yes. But you appeared out of thin air. So I think whatever she thinks, she probably thinks that you'll just appear again or whatever.
I'm sure we can arrange that.
Right. Okay. Back to you then.
Where were we?
Yes, I suppose at some point we had better find out what Fraulein Van Kant has been getting up to. It's probably a bit soon to expect results yet, but I do wonder how much of a trail of blood she's going to leave through London. As useful as she might be, maybe she does actually represent the greatest threat out of everyone we've encountered so far.
Well, that's why I thought it was best to keep her occupied. We could go about our business.
All of this reminds me, how long until the auction of the book?
Good point. It's going to be in 2 days' time, according to Bowers, or according to the information that Dive's got. So, I mean, whatever happens, there will be a book will surface in 2 days' time. Well, unless something dramatic stops it.
Yes, I remember we had schemes and plans, and I can't remember what they were.
Well, let's say it's a moving target right now.
I did kind of upset the apple cart in the last session, I think. And it's all up for grabs now.
Now, one thing I'll ask you, I'll put to you, are you still going to try and acquire it for Dives? Or are you now? Do you now want it for yourselves? Or what's your kind of objective now? Because he's going to pay you quite a lot of money to get this hold of this book for him.
I think that would be a question for you, Emery.
I suppose we really should. Apart from anything else, the reputation of the bookshop would be bolstered somewhat if we were to successfully procure this book and deliver it to Mr. Dives.
And if we didn't deliver it, it's...
Well, this is an auction, correct? Oh, yes. Wally knows a way around an auction, for sure. Do you know what the volume in question, the reserve, what is it expected to go for? Who are the players who are looking for it?
Unless something else has happened in the meantime that I don't know about, we still don't know where the auction's happening. So if you could find out that would be great.
A rare books auction?
We do know, don't we, that the book is currently in the possession, if I remember correctly, of a Mr. Paul Fletcher, who was arriving in London probably around now or very soon around now.
I think Fletcher's the buyer, Dr. Emery.
Yes.
You see, I don't want to split hairs on this particular topic, but an auction is one thing. Where the book is right now is another thing. So we could get the book now, which we've kind of been doing to, shall we say, limited success. And if that continues, then hopefully we can find out where the auction is. And then, you know, Miss Wally, we're in the auction territory.
Well, I suppose one possibility might be you... Miss Wally, do seem to be a woman who knows her way around high society and is used to dealing with matters of finance and procurement of rare things, perhaps. Do you think perhaps you might be able to contact Mr. Bowers if we gave you the information and declare yourself an interested party in the auction and get the details that way?
I don't see why not. That sounds like a great plan. I'd be happy to, but you'll need to give me a little bit of information about who Mr. Bowers is and what specifically the book is, the title and that sort of thing. I don't want to come across as a rube.
Yes, yes. The title is Missing from My Notes.
That's quite close. That's almost the title. It's Missing the Polychotomansky by De Castrated.
Let's just call it the Urbi Clavis, the Keys to the City of Death. Urbi Clavis, that's what we shall...
Urbi Clavis.
Urbi Clavis. Okay. Is what we know it as colloquially.
Yes. Hand me Mr. Bowers' contact information and I will contact him immediately about the Urbi Clavis and hopefully...
I don't wish to put a crimp in this, but remember, Bowers has gone to ground. You met him in the pub.
Yes.
He told you that he was very worried about all these people kind of zeroing in on him, and he disappeared off into and said you'll see him again at the in 2 days' time at the auction. That was the last you saw.
No, I don't think that's entirely accurate.
Oh, no, you're right.
Because I was tracking Bowers, you see. I was tracking Bowers, and that thing was probably going to try and get him, but it got me first, and I, you know, gave it a bit of this and a bit of that, and then Bowers had a go, and he wasn't very good, and then we could did a little bit more. And anyway, the point is that Bowers brought me to the hospital.
Yes.
But then disappeared.
Just going to say, I've got the Broadgate Hotel written down here. Something to do with the...
That's where Fletcher's
going. Right.
Yes, roommate 04.
You know, there's more NPCs that I haven't introduced to you.
You're joking, Andy. I can't believe it. You're joking. You're serious.
I'm not.
You've got a stat block for every man, woman and child in London.
You never know when you're going to need to punch a toddler.
Let's just help Rita out now, because I don't want to stay in the hospital. Let's say that the surgery went well. You no longer have a major wound, because that would be unfortunate. And you do get 3 hit points back. Now, I still think you're pretty bad shape, aren't you? You're
6 hit points up from 3.
You're on 6. You're on 6 hit points. Okay.
What I'd like to say then is I'd like to say, listen, I've had enough of this place. Can we just get out of here? Can you just get one of them wheelchairs? And
perhaps we can get a chair. Yes. Well, we can get you a chair.
Yes, I'm sure we can.
You're wearing a hospital gown at the moment, Rita.
We'll get you a chair. We'll just tell him we're popping out for a smoke.
Into the quadrant. We're going to the quadrant.
It'll be fine.
And they're not going to notice if you just end up wheeling the chair over the hills and far away?
No. Well, they've got enough to worry about here.
It's a very large hospital, and you can't be the first person to have that idea, but I'm interested to see how this plays out.
Could we get on a tram or something like that? And they get the wheelchair up in the entrance, and they're wiggling it past the...
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So Emery and Milton wheeling Rita in her hospital gown in a wheelchair down and out of the main entrance into the quadrant. She lights a cigarette to maintain the ruse. And then with the shouts of the hospital porter echoing behind you in the streets, the four of you are going as fast as your legs will carry you up towards Whitechapel, pushing her.
I have a movement rate of 4, Andy.
But the porter has only got one leg. So his movement rate is 3. And he's hobbling behind saying, "Oi, that's my wheelchair!" As you disappear off into the London night.
But when we get back to the bookshop, I think Rita will demand that one of the back rooms of the bookshop is converted into a convalescence room, because I can't get up the stairs.
Nice.
That'll be fine. I'll bring you lunch and stuff and you'll be...
Yes.
I love the image, but I think if you're wheelchair bound for the rest of the scenario, it might make things a bit...
I just need a day or two.
Okay. All right. Okay.
You're perfectly welcome to make yourself comfortable on the chaise longue over there behind the counter. Just be careful, because Melpomene does rather like sleeping there as well, and I can't imagine anything good coming of you and her fighting over it.
Oh, fantastic. You got the bedpan here ready for me. Thanks very much.
Those stitches will open up again in a trice if you mess with Melpomene.
I think Rita in the auction in a wheelchair could be pretty good. It could be pretty good.
That's good.
Maybe we could get you a couple of sticks to shuffle around on or something.
Totally.
Maybe you can hide some weapons in the wheelchair or a bomb, you know, dynamite.
Bomb. Just push the chair in.
Have you been watching Breaking Bad again recently or something?
Actually, that's a good callback. No, I'd completely forgotten that, but...
I'd like to gas the entire congregation, actually. We could have little, you know, gas masks and knock everyone out who's in there. So I could just deposit little bombs of gas. Yeah, that would be great.
Yes.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, terribly sorry.
I do rather feel that we're getting ahead of ourselves here, because we don't actually know where the auction is going to be. And it's rather difficult to gas an auction if we don't know where to gas.
We've got Miss Wally on the case. She knows the way around an auction. She's going to find the auction. We've been looking for weeks. We don't, you know, I'm a private detective. Days, well, months even. I lost total track of time. You're researchers, investigators. I'm a private detective. Miss Wally is an auction specialist.
I think we have this thing in the bag.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I do have a few threads I could possibly pull.
You're certainly good at spending money.
I'm very good at spending money, and I do have an interest in the occult, so I'm wondering if maybe I have a contact or two who would at least know of this. Since he went to ground because he's feeling the heat, then there's got to be some twitterings and natterings in the community of people who have rather esoteric collections.
Maybe there's a guy who's got a little antique shop called Mr. Height. Height's Antiques, and he can help you out.
Yes, hoary old antiques. Let's have two little scenes to end with. So through a contact, Wally, you're a socialite, you know everyone who knows everyone. You do get an invitation to afternoon tea at Claridge's to meet someone that could give you some good information about this. And you head up there and you're... What does Wally step out in? Is she more of a sort of flapperish or a bit more traditional?
So Wally kind of, she's not like very flapperish, but she does prefer a certain look of comfort. And so if you look at her clothes, they're very expensive, but they're also quite shapeless. Like she likes to wear these kind of silk smock dresses and comfortable, shiny men's shoes, dark stockings. She looks a little bit, she affects sort of an artistic air, but there's, you know, her clothes are quite expensive. This is very,
oh, good,
yes,
good.
They're very, very nice, but she doesn't go in for flashy flapper fashion. She looks a little bit more like a student at De Stijl or something.
Oh, nice. Modernist. And I suppose when you're in the country, it's tweed skirts and jackets. And...
Yes. Yes. As riding boots and yeah, she has all of that. Yes.
Jodhpurs.
Absolutely. Riding crop. No, stop it. So.
Fucking hell.
you head to Claridge's and you... The person that you've been introduced to is sitting there and he gets up and he's a rather odd looking fellow. He's quite stout and florid with a comical little toothbrush moustache, thinning hair and a jaunty tooled walking stick. And oddly...
Is that the description in the book?
Yeah. He has a pinned up sleeve on his left arm, which is weird because he's obviously missing half of his left arm as well, which is completely... maybe makes you pause a minute as you approach him. And he says, he leans into you, takes your hand with his right hand. He says, "Enchanté, madame. Enchanté. I am Louis de Castries. Let us sit."
Certainly. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, sir.
Now, a mutual friend told me that you are interested in a certain special volume. Is that so?
Yes. I believe colloquially it's known as the Keys to the City of Death.
Ah, yes. By Clavis. Very good, very good. Yes, a very rare volume. Very rare indeed. Only three copies, I think, have ever surfaced.
Hmm. Well, a little bird told me that one of those copies is going to auction soon, and I was just curious as to where and when that was happening.
May we. And before I divulge anything important, would you get to tell me what your interest is in this volume? I do not know you or know of your name. You are new on the scene, no?
Well, I'm new on the scene on my own. I did a little bit of time in the Unblinking High Eye of Horus, the secret societies. I've been in a few of them, but this is kind of a personal interest of mine, let me just say. I have something of a collection, and I'm a little bit of a completist, and death rites and old gods have been interesting to me lately. I'd like to know more, and I don't know, it's sort of a passing fancy, but I do tend to get the things that I want.
No doubt. But you are working alone, are you, madame?
Well, one is never alone when one has friends, but this interest is mine, yes.
Very well.
I'm not acting on behalf of any organization, if that's what you're asking.
Well, you must be aware, then, that many people wish to lay their hands on this volume.
No doubt.
Well, I tell you what, madame. I have a little interest in it myself, you see. Maybe we work together.
And then what? If we get the book, do we split it down the middle or just establish some sort of a custody schedule?
No. Of course not. Let us say I am willing to pay a considerable amount of money for this volume myself. Now, I can see from the way you comport yourself that money may be no object to you either.
I have ample means, I would say. It's a little gauche to talk specifics.
So then it is a matter of who places the most importance in this book. You, a casual hobbyist in these matters, or me, someone who has a rightful claim to ownership. You see, this volume was written by my great-great-great-grandfather. It is, no doubt, as you know, the De Castries version.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, whilst I appreciate your help, I have to tell you, madame, I will end up with this volume one way or the other. And so I wish you to tell your friends, for I am sure you have friends, that they must not stand in my way.
And then he just stands up, kind of clicks his heels together, bows, and says,
enjoy the afternoon tea. I do not like this tradition myself.
And then he walks out.
Well, that was rather useless. He gave me no information whatsoever. What a rude little man.
Yeah, just a warning.
Yeah, well.
But you do notice that he left an envelope on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it's addressed to you.
Oh. Well, he left behind a calling card of some sort. Well, I'll open it up.
Oh, dear.
Yes, and we will cut as you're opening up this envelope.
Yeah, we probably should have warned you about that.
Yeah, you're going to have an interesting beginning to the next session, Jen.
Whoops.
We will end today's session with Milton. Back in the pie shop, Milton, with your salvage from the Royal London Hospital. What have you got in your pockets, Milton?
Well, just the odds and ends, some bits. I've laid them out on the table and I'm admiring my spoils and wondering how best to prepare them, thinking about adding something new to the menu of this shop. And just wondering how best to prepare these items.
Well, you know what blood's good for, Milton.
Well, yes, sausage, a nice black pudding.
The blackest of black puddings.
Indeed.
And so we will leave Milton there holding two surgical bags full of blood and looking around for some wheat grain or something to mix in to make a delicious black pudding.
Some kind of, yeah. Something to bind it, yes.
Oh, God. Jen, are you willing to come back next session?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This was a bit more cannibalistic than usual.
Yeah, by a slight degree.
That's Cthulhu, baby.
Spencer, you good? You're good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just thinking, yeah, maybe, you know, I could keep this stuff kind of behind closed doors to a certain extent.
Oh, no, I think so. I don't think we want to do too...
I mean, we've established what I'm up to.
I think Milton's character arc is totally fascinating. It's the best character arc I know. And I feel like there's some secret stuff going on and I never get to the bottom of it. It's fascinating. It's totally fascinating.
It's bottomless.
Okay, well, things are moving on apace. We might even have an auction at some point.
Yeah.
Can't rush into these things, Andy.
No, because it's now just maybe 24 hours away, because obviously we've gone to the next day. And poor Wally, Well, let's see. This might be the shortest character arc of all time.
This is, I shouldn't have opened the envelope, I'm sure, but it's fine.
I think that's wonderful.
She's never encountered a bad envelope. They're always good envelopes. They have things like party invitations and dividend reports and things like that.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
Allowance from daddy and...
Well, I can say it's a good thing that it's silver service. That's all I will say. That's not a hint, although it might be. All right.
It is a hint.
I mend a clock, an apple cart, a broken heart. I mend anything, but he'd rather sing. Toodle-loom-a-loom-a, toodle-loom-a-loom-a, toodle-lie.
It's thank you time again, and as usual, I wanted to thank all of our backers at all levels. We can't do the show without you. Well, we could, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as good, because with your support and help, we can do all of the extra things that we want to do. I also want to thank all the players, who I realised I haven't really been thanking in our thanks section, so thank you to all the players. I love you all dearly, and I hope that we can continue doing Grizzly Peaks far, far into the future until we're old and grey and can't remember what happened in the last session. Actually, I think that kind of applies to me already, but for the rest of you, you'll get there soon, don't worry. And if you do like our show, which I assume you are if you've listened all the way to the end, then do come and join the fun at patreon.com/grizzlypeaks. Look forward to seeing you there.
Umbrellas to men, umbrellas to men.